882-6PR.
6PR.
On 882-6PR, Jason Jordan.
20 minutes to three here on 882-6PR. Now, regular listeners of 6PR will know that outside of the work that I do with 6PR, I'm an IT geek. I'm involved in computers and technology and all of that kind of thing. But I'm knowledgeable about the stuff that currently exists. I don't know that much about what's coming down the track. There are people out there who do know a lot about it, though, and they make a career out of being business futurists. They can see what's coming, and they help companies out with how that technology is going to affect them and what they can do to address it before it's too late, before it all comes along and surprises you. Morris Mizalowski is our business futurist, and he joins us now. G'day, Morris.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
I'm really, really well. Morris, what's coming down the track? I'm not going to say be scared of, but what should we be aware of? How are we going to address what's coming?
Oh, we definitely shouldn't be scared. There's some great stuff coming along. One of the interesting trends has been obviously social networking, and that's not new to anybody. That's, you know, the Facebooks, the LinkedIn, we're talking about. Mm. We're certainly going to see a lot more of that moving forward over the next 5 to 10 years. In fact, most of our online world is going to be taken over by some kind of social network.
So you don't see it as being a flash in the pan?
Oh, it absolutely isn't. It's gone far, far beyond that. And Facebook's a great example of that. You know, Facebook's only been around for about 3 years or so, 3.5 years at most. But yet they announced this week that they have now 300 million people online every month.
That is just unbelievable, isn't it? That's more than a country.
It absolutely is, and it's incredible. And these are 300 million active users per month. And what I find fascinating is that most of those are not in America. So, you know, we might have this preconception that it's kind of American-centric. And it really isn't anymore. It's spread evenly around the world. But what's interesting is that Facebook is now used for much more than just finding out where people are or where they're having coffee or you know, where they went to school. It's become almost an active search engine. So people are using it to connect with people they don't know or to find out information that's current. And one of Facebook's big statements moving forward is that they want to become the search engine of the future.
Okay, that's interesting. But isn't it, Morris, isn't it mainly kids?
It absolutely isn't. In fact, Facebook's average age is above 30 years.
Okay.
Most of the people using it are 30 years, and the biggest growing segment, according to Facebook, is in fact women over 50.
Wow.
So the kids are not using Facebook all that much. They're not in the Twitters. They're not in the LinkedIns. They're around the ether in different places. So it's become a very mainstream tool. The other thing interesting, just to harp on Facebook for a second, is that they're also cash flow positive in the same announcement. And which means, of course, that they are now making more money than they need to stay afloat.
And how are they doing that? How are they making money?
Now, they've got some really interesting income. A lot of their income, I think 200 million or something from memory, comes out of Microsoft alone. So
okay.
Microsoft, in the way that they use Facebook and promote themselves through it, are paying them a heap. A lot of it's coming through the ads that they've got in there.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this really nice mixed portfolio of money coming in now, which is something that's going to sustain them moving forward.
So they're not talking about making people pay for membership?
No, I don't think that will ever happen. No, it is likely in the future we'll see some kind of premium service, but that will really be an only-if situation, only if you wanted those additional tweaks. But they'd be foolhardy too, and everything they've done so far hasn't led to us to believe that.
I hear a lot of people out there, Morris, who are like resisting the temptation. You know, they're proud of the fact that they don't use Facebook, and they're proud of the fact that I'm not going to use Twitter. That's silly. That's for twits. You know, you get all that kind of thing. But you're arguing it's not going away, and therefore people really do need to accept that it's there and maybe even get involved.
Absolutely. To me, I talk about two worlds that we live in. One is the physical world, where you and I are at the moment, and the other one's the virtual world. And the virtual world is just becoming more and more prevalent for all of us. You know, the mobile devices that we carry around mean that we carry that world with us all the time. When you and I want to do most things, when you and I want to do things, most of us will go online for some portion of that. So with my retail clients, for instance, the figure is somewhere around 60% of a retail purchase is in fact made online. People.
That's and the research, I guess.
It's not, absolutely, it's the research, or it's the purchase of it, or it's talking to friends in a Facebook-type environment or a social network about whether they've bought it or enjoyed it. One of the growing trends is, of course, being recommended to retailers. So a friend will say, I went out and bought those shoes and I love them, you've got to get a pair.
So it's the referrals that are very useful as well. And you can't really buy that, can you?
You absolutely can't, although you can try and manufacture it.
Mm.
And that's what we're doing with a lot of our clients now, is we're building social networking sites for them specific. So brands are actually now attaching themselves quite happily to these social networking sites and building these places where customers want to go.
Yeah.
In the States, the big retailers like Sears and Walmart all have social networking spaces. And when you go to them, they're warm, cuddly places. They're not, they're not shouting at you, come and buy my product every 3 seconds. They're in fact a community of people who are there sharing a common interest or thought. It might be around sport, or it might be around cooking, or it might be a group of mothers. And it's obvious that they're being marketed to, and that's surreptitiously.
Yeah.
But these people are having conversations. They're actually talking to each other. They're getting information from this big worldwide web. They're coming to this one centralized place, and they're brought to you by the courtesy of that retailer.
And, of course, that's useful then for that retailer in that the name becomes associated with warm and fuzzy feelings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it allows the retailer then to bring product or service or whatever they do into that space in a way that's comfortable to most people, and again, without evangelizing to them. It's not the heavy push. It's that we know you're interested in this kind of topic or issue. We want to bring it to your attention. If you want to buy it, that's great. Otherwise, just keep hanging around with us.
Mm. Now, I've read as well in the online media of late, there's an argument that Twitter turns you into a twit, but Facebook makes you clever.
I like this one. This was a research piece that came out about 10 days ago. The researcher argued, it was Dr. Alloway of Stirling University, argued that if you use Twitter, in fact, it made you into a twit. And that's because the information you were putting through Twitter was very short and sharp.
Mm.
You didn't have time to think about it. So you were really going in that mental, subconscious stream of just saying what was on the top of your mind. And therefore, those people really didn't have a very high IQ, and that's the word that she used.
Mm.
Conversely, if you were in Facebook, because you had time to think about your response and to craft it and to put the words together carefully, it meant that most people on Facebook and that used that predominantly were of a higher IQ.
I don't know, Morris, I'd argue that. I think, with Twitter, that 140-character limitation forces you to be very succinct and, I think, quite clever in how you get as much information as you can into that one sentence.
I'm absolutely with you. And, in fact, I ask people to be very careful about Twitter. Oh, sorry, to use Twitter as a way of being very careful about their language. Because, as you've said absolutely correctly, Jason, that it's difficult to get a really precise, concise message across 140 characters. And if you can do that well, then you've got a really good ability to get your message across.
I love it. It's language hacking at its finest.
It's self-editing too.
Mm.
And when you do it well, you really do come down to the point of what's important, what do I need to get across, and how quickly and how succinctly can I say that? Which is kind of the opposite of me.
Now, Morris, many of our listeners probably remember a movie called RoboCop or even The Terminator, where whenever you got the viewpoint of RoboCop or The Terminator, you had this kind of like a heads-up display so he could see what was in front of him, but he also had information scrolling past about what he was looking at. I understand that sort of technology is now starting to become a reality.
Oh, it's coming to a screen near you. And the screen near you is, in fact, a mobile phone.
Okay.
So virtual reality is something that we've been playing around for quite a while, and I've been talking to my clients about it. But as you said rightly, for the last 4 or 5 years, we've known it was on the horizon, but we always imagined that it would come in the way of large goggles or something else that we'd have to carry around. What's happened now, and we have to give credit, I think, in some cases, to the Apple iPhone. It's the technology that's pushed it over the edge. We're now seeing apps or applications that are being built where we have that virtual reality overlay. So it's, in the last month or so, we've seen 3 apps for the iPhone. One of them only works in France, and that's an overlay of the French railway system, the Metro. So what you can do is download the app onto your Apple iPhone. It's a couple of dollars, as most things are. And then when you stand in France, your phone recognizes where you are. It's got all those wonderful things. It's got the compass and the geo-satellites and the rest of it attached. And it gives you an actual image of where you are. So it's kind of like looking through a pair of binoculars. So imagine your iPhone's a pair of binoculars now. You can see out the other end of the screen, and it does that by the camera inside. So you're actually looking through it. And as well as seeing what's around you, so the Arc de Triomphe or wherever you are, you can actually then see, as you said before, little bubbles over the top of it. And the bubbles over the top of it give you information that's been overlaid about that particular destination.
Fantastic.
So it might give you the shops that are around there. It might give you Twitter or Facebook feeds of other people that are around there. It might give you directions to where you want to go. So it's all specific to that actual spot that you're standing on. And as you move around, as you move your iPhone, it scans the horizon as a pair of binoculars does, and those images, those overlays change to let you know where you are and what's happening. What's interesting is you can then ask to be guided to the local metro station, and it will give you arrows that point you in the direction of where the station is in real time. So you actually look through this pair of binoculars, the iPhone, and it guides you with arrows right to the station, right through it, and then when you're in there, it tells you when the train's coming and when to get on and what the next stops are and all the way through.
I might finally be able to convince my dad to actually get a proper gadget.
You may. You may. So, you know, these virtual reality ones, as I said, there are three of them. There's one in the States, one in France, and one somewhere else. We're going to see more and more of them. I know they're lined up, and we're just waiting for the Apple iStore to approve them.
Mm.
But it's interesting because this is a consumer version, but there are great purposes for this apart from just that kind of element.
Absolutely.
Now, medicine uses it quite a bit now, and that's for training purposes. So they're able to teach prospective doctors, prospective surgeons, about the human body and the anatomy, and they can actually operate on a virtual being. So that's a great way, and we're quite used to people doing it in simulated aeroplanes or large trucks to be able to do that. But there was this interesting thing I came across the other week, again in virtual reality, which is a group of scientists who are working on a contact lens. So the contact lens is what you and I might be used to. You know, when our eyesight's not as good, we put a contact lens in and we can see. We don't need a pair of glasses. It's exactly the same kind of contact lens. Put it into your eye. Can't be seen by the person outside, if that makes sense. So it looks like you've got normal eyes. But inside, you are now seeing virtual reality overlay.
I guess we'll see that in probably the police and military markets first.
Well, if it comes out, we will. I mean, I think there's a long way for them to go. It's kind of what Arnie wore in the Terminator movies, if you can remember back to those.
Yeah.
These little devices have a built-in lens with one LED. They're powered wirelessly with RF. And they have all sorts of integrated controls in them. So you can not only see the things I've said before, you know, things around you and get an overlay of the environment, but they can also be used to check on you. By that meaning that if you have a heart condition or if there's something medically wrong with you, it actually keeps constant contact between your body and the medical team if that's the need. So it sends back all those messages backwards and forwards. It can help the hearing impaired, we're told, because it recognises the environment that you're in and if people are talking. It translates, so it's voice to text, and that comes up in front of your eye and translates for you if it's in different languages. It gives you visual cues and navigation systems. So, like scientists do, they push the edge of these things when they start to prototype them. And I'm not convinced we're going to see them in the next two or three years, and when we do, 5 years plus, they'll be in specialist environments. But I think something like that will be coming forward for the people that find a use for that in an environment. I don't think it's something you and I are going to be wearing every day.
Well, soon enough if I can. Morris, we're constrained by time this afternoon, so unfortunately I'm going to have to let you go, but I could keep chatting for hours about this stuff.
Oh, it's fun, isn't it?
Absolutely love it. Morris, if people want to find out more about what you do, what's your website?
It's businessfuturist.com.
Fantastic. Morris Mizalowski, Business Futurist. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure as always. Have a great weekend, Jason.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks. That's Morris.